Alrighty, good morning, everyone. We are on the record. That means that these proceedings are being recorded. Let me introduce myself. My name is Lee Walder. I'm an administrative law judge with the Maryland Office of Administrative Hearings. My office, the Office of Administrative Hearings, is a separate and independent state agency. It is not part of the Maryland Department of Health. I do not work for the Maryland Department of Health. It's also not part of any hospital system, including Spring Grove Hospital Center, which is the hospital I'm conducting hearings at this morning. Just for the record, today's date is October 31st, 2023. I'm conducting these hearings on WebEx. It's a virtual web platform that allows everyone to participate remotely. One of the cases on my docket is the matter of Michael Kapnek, which is OAH case number ending 03-23-27755. At issue in this matter is whether or not Mr. Kapnek is eligible for discharge or conditional release. And as to this issue, Mr. Kapnek has the burden of proof by a preponderance of the evidence. I have a representative from the Maryland Department of Health / Spring Grove Hospital who's present. I believe Mr. Kapnek's going to be representing himself, but I'll get there in a second. For the representative for Maryland Department of Health.
Good morning, Your Honor. Catherine Bagley, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the Maryland Department of Health and Spring Grove Hospital Center. For the record, with me are Ms. Katie Hearn, Dr. Lauren Butler, and Dr. Delverne Dressel.
Thank you very much. And let me see, I have Mr. Kapnek. Mr. Kapnek, which one are you? There you are. Can you unmute that room?
Good morning, Judge. Michael Kapnek, pro se.
Hi, Mr. Kapnek. Just checking in, did you want to represent yourself for this hearing, sir?
Yes, sir, I did. I didn't know if now was the time for just a little bit of housekeeping. I did have a couple exhibits I intended to submit, just some brief things surrounding, you know, why I was representing myself today. But yes, I am going to be representing myself, sir.
All right, just making sure that you know that you have that the public defender sometimes will represent people during these hearings if they wish them to do so, but you do not want them to do so in this matter?
Not today, Your Honor.
All righty, very well. Then I find that you've knowingly and voluntarily waived your right to have somebody from the public defender's office represent you for this hearing, and you can represent yourself, and I'll explain exactly how this hearing is going to proceed. So the issue, as I stated at the beginning, the issue is whether or not Mr. Kapnek is eligible for discharge or conditional release. As to this issue, Mr. Kapnek has the burden of proof by a preponderance of the evidence. Let me explain what that means. What that means is that it's a legal standard that it's more likely so than not so. The way the hearing will proceed is because Mr. Kapnek has the burden, he can present his case first, or if he wants, he can have the hospital present its case. I don't know. Just preliminarily, Ms. Bagley, is the hospital objecting to the what was the hospital's position, just so I understand?
Your Honor, the hospital is supporting Mr. Kapnek's release. So if it's all right with Mr. Kapnek, we would be happy to put our witnesses on first to support the legal requirements for the release. And then I believe Mr. Kapnek does have an additional witness and perhaps his own testimony that he'd like to provide.
Sure. So, Mr. Kapnek, I'll just in a few minutes, I'll see how you want to proceed. But because you have the burden, you have the opportunity to present your case first. But if the hospital's in support of your release, you might want to have them, and it's up to you entirely, have them present their case first in support of your release. And then you can present your case afterwards. However it's organized, cases like this are presented in a few, have three different stages. Stage one is opening statements. It's not required. It's just kind of a roadmap of where both sides think they're going to take their case. And typically about one to 2 minutes for a case like this for opening statements. Then presentation of evidence, where you can present documents and you can present witnesses. Any documents that are presented are subject to objection by the other side. Any witnesses are subject to cross-examination by the other side. Mr. Kapnek, you're welcome to testify if you wish to do so as well, of course, as a witness for yourself. And Then the last stage of the hearing is closing arguments, where you tell me what you want me to do with this case. And I don't give a decision today. In fact, I don't even give a decision. I give a recommendation. Recommendation is a written recommendation that would go to a would go to the Montgomery County Circuit Court and to the Baltimore County Circuit Court. And I have 10 days to issue that recommendation, and any party that disagrees with that recommendation has the right to file exceptions, and that exceptions process, how you go through that process, will be listed on one of the last pages of the recommendation that will be mailed out to both sides. With that, just preliminarily on my end, I have received 7 exhibits from on behalf of the hospital. Mr. Kapnick, have you received those 7 exhibits as well?
I did, Judge.
Okay, great. And Mr. Kapnick, was there any documents that you wanted me to consider during the course of your hearing, sir?
Not particularly for the actual issue of, my fitness to potentially get a conditional release, but just something I was hoping to get on the record regarding, my representing myself versus having the Office of the Public Defender represent me. It's something that I hope would not, hinder us from proceeding today, but I did just want to get it on the record as the doctor and hopefully Ms. Bagley have been made aware of.
So I'm allowing you to proceed pro se. I don't know if you need me to know anything additional, but for the purpose of this hearing, I find that you have knowingly and voluntarily waived your right to counsel, and thus am allowing you to proceed without any representation. So I don't know if there's anything else that you need me to know, but that request has been granted at this point.
Okay. I'd still like to submit the exhibits for the record, Your Honor. That was something that I felt strongly about, and just something I wanted to be in the record, sir.
All right. Have you provided those exhibits to the Maryland Department of Health so that they have had an opportunity to review them?
I have. I provide them to my doctor.
Your Honor, if Mr. Kapnick could just describe the documents that he is seeking to have admitted, I think there's a high likelihood that I've seen these before or that I'm aware of them. So if he could just let me know what the documents are that he's referring to.
Okay. So, in short, I have an affidavit of indigency, a motion for waiver of costs, a letter from the Office of the Public Defender withdrawing their appearance based on certain factors, a screenshot of an email that was sent in regards to that letter, and finally a motion for postponement that the Office of the Public Defender had filed on my behalf in the past during this hospital course. But nevertheless, on my behalf, and those were the items I was hoping to put on the record today.
The department has no opposition to the introduction of those documents for the purpose of establishing the representation relationship between Mr. Kapnick and his former counsel. Obviously, I don't believe that they would be considered for anything else. So we just want to make clear that that is the purpose for which they are being admitted, and we do not oppose that.
All righty, very well. I'll bring them into evidence as long as I get a copy, because I don't have those documents. So, Ms. Bagley, I don't know if you have the ability to send them to me.
Your Honor, if I may, Dr. Dressel, when this hearing is over, could you and Mr. Kapnick scan those documents and email them to me, and I will send them to the administrative law judge?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Alrighty, very well. So as long as I receive them, I will admit them as just what they're typically referred to during these hearings as patient's exhibits, so I'll admit them collectively as patient's exhibit number 1. Any other documents that you think that you're going to be producing during the course of your hearing, Mr. Kapnick?
No, I don't intend to. I only have one family witness aside from a couple witnesses from the hospital, which you're well aware of. They are here right now with us in this call.
All righty, very well. And just preliminarily, while I'm talking to Mr. Kapnick, how did you want to organize the case? Did you want the hospital to present its case first in support of your release, or did you want to go before the hospital?
Yeah, I know the normal kind of protocol and procedure is that I go first, and you know the onus is on me. But the hospital, in support of my release, has offered to go first, and you know, hopefully make it a little less burdensome on all of our schedules today.
So you're fine with the hospital presenting their case first?
I am, Judge.
All righty, very well. All right. Any other questions or concerns about the hearing? How the hearing's going to be conducted on your end, Mr. Kapnick?
No, sir.
All righty. And Ms. Bagley, any questions or concerns or anything preliminarily on your end that you want to bring to my attention?
No, Your Honor. The hospital would just move for the admission of the seven exhibits that were provided to Mr. Kapnick and to the court prior to the hearing.
Do you mind just identifying what those documents are?
Of course. I apologize, Your Honor.
Thanks so much.
For the record, the first exhibit, which is a one-page document, is the notice of hearing for the conditional release hearing, which we are at today. Exhibit number two is a 16-page document. This is a letter that precedes the conditional release report of Dr. Delvin Dressel regarding Mr. Kapnick. Exhibit number three is a one-page document, which is dated October 24th, 2023. This is confirmation from the Community Forensic Aftercare Program that they have reviewed the proposed conditional release order and will be able to monitor Mr. Kapnick. Exhibit number four is a one-page document, which is the order of commitment to the Maryland Department of Health after a verdict of not criminally responsible in Montgomery County Circuit Court case numbers 132151C as in Charlie and 135430C as in Charlie. Exhibit number five is the statement of charges that originated in the District Court of Maryland for Montgomery County but later became the indicted case. This is a 13-page document. It includes the statement of charges for both Montgomery County cases and their associated indictments. And exhibit number six is the order of commitment to the Maryland Department of Health after a verdict of not criminally responsible in Baltimore County case number C as in Charlie 03 C as in Charlie R as in Robert 19000144. And finally, exhibit number seven, which is a six-page document, is the original statement of charges in the District Court of Maryland for Baltimore County in the aforementioned case, which later was indicted. These are the seven exhibits that were provided to the administrative law judge and to Mr. Kapnick prior to the hearing, and the hospital would move for the admission of those seven exhibits.
Alrighty, Mr. Kapnick, do you have any objection to me considering those seven exhibits during the course of this hearing?
No, I do not, Your Honor.
Alrighty, very well. So, and in making my decision as well. So I see you shaking your head that you have no objection. All right, with that then, Maryland Department of Health exhibits 1 through 7 are admitted at this point. Anything else preliminarily on your end, Ms. Bagley?
No, Your Honor.
All righty. I'll give the sides an opportunity to give an opening if they wish to give an opening. You don't need to if you don't wish to do so, because the opening's not evidence. It's just a roadmap. Ms. Kapnick, do you wish to give an opening, sir?
No, Judge. I'm going to waive.
Very well. And Ms. Bagley, do you wish to give an opening?
Oh, Your Honor, we'll waive.
All righty. Very well. All right. Then, Ms. Bagley, who's going to be the first witness on behalf of the Maryland Department of Health?
So, not to put any additional wrinkle in things, but due to some scheduling availability this morning, normally we would have Dr. Dressel testify first because he's the treating psychiatrist, but Dr. Butler has a meeting that she needs to be at, so we'll start with Dr. Lauren Butler.
Very well. All right, Dr. Butler, if you can just unmute your mic, and can you just state and spell your first and your last name, please?
This is Lauren Butler, L-A-U. Butler, B-U-T-L-E-R.
Thank you very much, Dr. Butler. And Dr. Butler, what is your title and where do you work?
I work at Spring Grove Hospital. I'm the assistant director of the Department of Psychology here at Spring Grove and also a unit psychologist.
Your Honor, may I interrupt? I've been having a little bit of difficulty hearing Ms. Bagley, and I'm really having difficulty hearing Dr. Butler. Is there any way that the two of them could speak louder, please?
Sure. All right, if you don't mind speaking louder. And with that, Dr. Butler, can you raise your right hand so I can swear you in? Do you promise or affirm under penalties of perjury that the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
All right, put your hand down, and Ms. Bagley, you're a witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Butler, you've indicated you're the assistant director of the Department of Psychology. What does that position entail?
As the assistant director,
just quickly, I wasn't sure if you wanted to qualify her as an expert in any area, Ms. Bagley.
No, Your Honor. Right. No, we're just using her as a fact witness, essentially.
Very well.
Thank you.
I oversee our admissions units, specifically the psychology services provided on those units. I handle any coverage issues amongst our issues as it relates to psychology coverage, act as a liaison between our psychology staff and administration, and work on enhancing the provision of psychological treatment across the hospital.
Thank you. Do you also serve as a unit psychologist?
I do.
And what does that entail?
I work to collaborate with a multidisciplinary treatment team, bringing the psychological perspective in treatment planning with our patients. I facilitate individual and group evidence-based therapies. I conduct psych assessments as needed and make referrals for specialized psych assessments like neuropsychology assessments as needed.
And how long have you worked for Spring Grove?
2.5 years.
And do you have any special degrees or doctorates that are related to your position?
I do have a doctorate in clinical psychology.
Thank you. And do you know Michael Kapnick?
I do, yes.
How do you know him?
I've been facilitating individual therapy sessions with him since February of 2023.
Sorry, 2023?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And how often do you meet with him or encounter him?
We meet once a week for an hour.
Without disclosing the details of what you communicate in your meetings, what types of things do you work on or discuss with Ms. Kapnick generally?
Generally, our sessions have come from a DBT approach. So we work on four skills modules: mindfulness, distress tolerance, emotion regulation, and interpersonal effectiveness skills to help Mr. Kapnick better cope with any distressing situations, to regulate his emotions more effectively, and deal interpersonally more effectively.
And what is DBT?
DBT stands for Dialectical Behavioral Therapy. It's a third wave evidence-based treatment that stems from cognitive behavioral therapy. It was created in the 1970s by Marshall Linehan to treat borderline personality disorder and subsequent parasuicidal behaviors. Since then, a lot of research has shown that DBT is really effective in treating a variety of personality disorders, including narcissistic personality disorder, mood disorders, trauma disorders, and substance use disorders. It's very helpful with individuals who struggle with emotion dysregulation and unstable or chaotic relationships.
Thank you. And based on your treatment experience with Mr. Kapnick, what, if any, recommendations do you have regarding continued therapy for Mr. Kapnick if he were to be released into the community?
Ideally, individual therapy. I think someone that comes from a cognitive behavioral therapy approach or a dialectical behavioral therapy approach would be beneficial but not required, really just individual therapy.
Okay. And how often do you think he should receive this therapy based on your work with him?
Once per week, if possible.
And to what extent is Mr. Kapnick engaged in therapy with you?
Oh, he's very actively engaged. He comes to every session. If any homework has been assigned, he has completed that homework. He's been observed using skills on the unit, which has been documented in his chart. So very, very engaged in therapy.
And how generally does Mr. Kapnick behave during these sessions with you?
He's very appropriate. He isn't afraid to ask questions or challenge me in a delicate manner, which, you know, I invite all of my patients to do. So that way we can have more fruitful discussions. He's very reflective. He's very honest. And so he's definitely made a lot of impact.
I believe you've kind of just mentioned it, but do you believe he has benefited from this therapy and in what ways, if so?
Absolutely. Since my time working with him, obviously I did a comprehensive chart review, and overall in the last several months I've seen less emotional dysregulation documented in this chart, less conflict documented in this chart. He's definitely far more capable of handling any interpersonal conflict that comes up effectively. He uses skills to manage his distress. I think, given the situation surrounding this case, it really shows how far he's come in using skills to navigate distress. So he's definitely made a lot of progress.
Wonderful. And based on your particular experience with Mr. Kapnick, and recognizing that you have a limited scope of experience with him, do you have any concerns about his potential release on conditions that would be recommended by the hospital?
Absolutely not.
Thank you very much, Dr. Butler. Nothing further.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Kapnick, do you have any questions for Dr. Butler?
No, Your Honor, I don't. I think everything was covered quite well during Ms. Bagley's examination, and I'm pleased with the evidence brought forth by Dr. Butler. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Butler, for your testimony. At this point, you're free to sign off and go to that meeting that you need to go to. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And Ms. Bagley, who's going to be the next witness on behalf?
Thank you, Honor. While we're going through faster witnesses, I think we'll do Ms. Hearn next.
All right, Ms. Hearn, if you could just unmute. Hi, Ms. Hearn. Can you just state and spell both your first and your last name, please?
My name is Katie Hearn, K-A-T-I-E, last name H-E-R-N.
Thank you very much. And what's your position and where do you work?
I am a social worker at Spring Grove Hospital Center on the Dayhoff C unit.
Thank you very much. All right, Ms. Hearn, can you raise your right hand so I can swear you in? Do you promise or affirm under penalties of perjury that the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do, yes.
All right, put your hand down, and I'll turn you over to Ms. Bagley for questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Hearn, how long have you worked for Spring Grove Hospital Center?
I have worked here for 4.5 years.
And you've indicated that your position is as a social worker in the hospital?
Correct.
What does your position entail?
I'm on an admissions unit, so we focus a lot on admissions and intakes, doing the psychosocials, but we also do work with competency assessments for patients who are admitted for competency needs. I do work with patients developing aftercare plans, getting benefits set up, IDs, and community coordination for discharge.
And do you have any special licensures associated with your position?
I do. When the original paperwork was written for this case, I was licensed as an LMSW, which is a licensed master social worker. And just last week, I was granted my LCSWC, the licensed clinical social worker certified.
Congratulations. And approximately how many individuals have you set up or coordinated discharge plans for while working at Spring Grove?
I would say between 75 and 100.
And do you know Michael Kapnick?
I do.
And how do you know him?
I completed his admission when he arrived at the hospital, and I have had him on my caseload for the entirety of his stay, except for the about 1 month period that he was not on our unit.
And how often do you interact with him?
I would say I see him at least daily. I work on his case weekly. And I interact with the team and his planning monthly.
And how would you describe Mr. Kapnick's cooperation with the coordination of his research?
He has been very active in the aspects. When we need to complete stuff, he is more than willing to sit down and work with me to complete what's needed.
And did you develop a discharge or release plan specifically with respect to Mr. Kapnick?
So we started the process. There are some steps that can't be finalized until after the conditional release is confirmed and approved. But we did complete a Social Security entitlement application. We have worked to get both his Social Security card and his birth certificate. We have started the process on medical assistance, which will be finalized closer to the discharge date. We push that back just a little just to make sure that the applications don't expire. And we've started the process in discussing some of the aftercare planning for what he will have when he leaves the hospital. But everything doesn't get finalized until the conditional release is approved.
And what psychiatric services have been recommended for Mr. Kapnick as part of this release plan?
For Mr. Kapnick, we are recommending medication management with psychiatry, continued therapy, group therapy, and substance use treatment.
And with respect to any psychiatric medication that he might be taking in the community, how will that be administered or by whom?
So with the conditional release, the recommendation is to follow the recommendation from the pre-screen. And the pre-screen notes 24/7 intensive level, as well as some of the medications that Mr. Kapnick is on. It will be supervised by staff from the housing program.
Thank you. And with respect to any housing program, what level of care is being recommended for Mr. Kapnick?
So the recommendation from the pre-screen is an intensive 24/7.
And when was Mr. Kapnick pre-screened for that level of care?
The pre-screen interview occurred in April of this year, 2023.
So it's been about 6 months. Has anything changed with respect to Mr. Kapnick that would cause the recommendation for the level of care that he requires to change?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you. And until his release, where would Mr. Kapnick reside?
He will remain at the hospital.
And are there any individuals with whom Mr. Kapnick cannot have contact or cannot have unlawful contact pursuant to the underlying criminal cases?
The only person is Nubia Henry. He's allowed to have contact, but just not unlawful contact.
And to your knowledge, who would monitor Mr. Kapnick while he's on conditional release?
CFAP, the Community Forensics Aftercare Program, as well as his program's treatment team.
And I believe you referenced this, but what, if any, specific therapies will be involved in his community treatment?
So Mr. Kapnick's been receiving PT while here at the hospital, so I would want to work with him to follow up and get a continued treatment for that. Substance use therapy, possible IOP, medication management for both substance use and mental health, as well as continuing therapy and medication management.
And have case management services been arranged for him, or who would provide those services?
So often those are program dependents. Some of the community programs have directly related they're called PRP programs. So RRPs, the Residential Rehabilitation Program, will be connected directly with the PRP, which is a psychiatric rehabilitation program. So if the program that he goes to has that direct affiliation, it would be that. If not, most programs have an affiliation with like a sister program.
Thank you. Thank you. And what are the initial recommendations for what Mr. Kapnick would be doing during the daytime?
The recommendation would be the IOP and the day programming initially, possibly working later on, but not at the initial discharge period.
But it is still conceivable that if his treatment team was in support of it and CFAP approved it, he would be able to work in future.
Yes, correct.
And does he have any family support involved?
He does. He has his brother-in-law, who is also on this call, as well as Miss Henry.
And in your capacity as a social worker who's been working with Mr. Kapnick, do you support Mr. Kapnick's release under the conditions that are being recommended by the hospital?
Yes, I do. I do support his release.
Thank you very much. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kapnick, any questions for Ms. Hearn?
No, Judge. I feel very pleased also with the Ms. Hearn provided, and no further questions, sir.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hearn. Ms. Hearn, I don't know if you wish to remain on this hearing for the rest of the hearing. If you don't, you're welcome to sign off at this point.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Bagley, are you calling any other witnesses on behalf of the hospital? If so, who are they?
Just one, Your Honor, the hospital's star witness, Dr. Del Dressel. We would just ask preliminarily, would Mr. Kapnick be willing to stipulate to Dr. Dressel's expertise in the fields of medicine and psychiatry, adult psychiatry?
One second, just take some notes and then I'll see. All right, so Mr. Kapnick, right now Ms. Bagley wants to know if you would be willing to stipulate, meaning recognize, that Dr. Dressel is an expert in two areas, which is in medicine and adult psychiatry. Are you willing to stipulate to his expertise in those two areas, sir?
Yes, I definitely waive any further information on that. I've personally received some of that expertise, and we'll discuss that later. Yes, thank you.
Alrighty, very well. All right. Based on stipulation, I find that Dr. Dressel meets criteria necessary to be deemed as an expert in medicine and adult psychiatry. He's deemed as such for this proceeding and can testify as such for this proceeding. With that, Dr. Dressel, can you just first state and spell your first and your last name, please?
My first name is Del Verne, D-E-L-V-E-R-N-E, but I go by Del. Last name is Dressel, D-R-E-S-S-E-L, Jr.
Thank you very much. And are you employed by Spring Grove?
I am, sir.
In what capacity?
I am a psychiatrist that works on a 25-bed all-male unit. Been working here for 13 years.
Perfect. All right, Dr. Dressel, if you can raise your right hand so I can swear you in. Do you promise or affirm under penalties of perjury that the testimony that you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you very much. Your witness, Ms. Bagley.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Dressel, are you familiar with Michael Kapnick?
I am.
And when did he arrive at Spring Grove?
Mr. Kapnick was admitted on October 24th, 2022.
And when did you begin treating him?
I was there to observe his intake, on the 24th, but I officially became his primary doctor on the 28th of October.
And how often do you interact with him or examine him?
I see Mr. Kapnick when I'm here 5 days a week, but many times throughout the week in the hallway. But we meet for our individual psychotherapy 2 hours. There's been times we've met for 3 hours, but I would say that we spend a good 2 hours with him on a weekly basis.
And prior to today's hearing, have you had an opportunity to review his record, his chart in the hospital?
I have.
And have you had an opportunity to speak with the rest of the treatment team?
Many times, yes.
How old is Mr. Kapnick?
51 years old.
And where is he from?
He's from Montgomery County.
And to your knowledge, what is his family background?
To my knowledge, Mr. Kapnick, I had a father and a mother, and I'm from that union, there were four children. Just referring to little notes here, his older brother was 7 years older than him. He had a sister who was 5 years older than him. And Mr. Kapnick had a younger sister who was 2 years younger than him. And unfortunately, his father left that family when Michael was five and started another family across town.
And do you know about Mr. Kapnick's work history?
Mr. Kapnick has had a myriad of jobs over the years. I'm just referring to my personal notes here. You know, he's has worked at Bonded Lighting Protection in Rockville, Maryland. He had worked at the Wintergreen Daycare Center. He has produced his own music DVD, which I've heard, which is actually pretty impressive, a Christian rap album. He's waited tables, detailed cars, jet ski instructor. But most notably, he had founded his own company, which is a lightning rod protection company. It's Universal Lighting Protection. That had been founded by Mr. Kapnick in the late 90s. That company, unfortunately, went bankrupt in 2003-2004. It laid dormant until about 2008, and it was opened in somebody else's name. He is not owner of that company anymore, but he's had a lot of work experience over the years.
And does he have a significant other or any children?
Mr. Kapnick has two children. He has an older daughter who's a midshipman down at the Naval Academy, and she is with mother of that child in that family. I believe the mother's remarried, just got a stepfather. And then he's got a son who is with Mrs. Nubia Henry. They're both in the 20s.
Thank you. And are you aware whether Mr. Kapnick has a family history of mental illness?
Yes. Michael's mother developed schizophrenia when Michael was 10 years old. She's still alive. Michael's older brother, Tad, developed schizophrenia, and he is also still alive.
And does Mr. Kapnick have any prior psychiatric hospitalizations before these NCR cases developed?
Yes, Mr. Kapnick has had many hospitalizations dating back to the late 90s.
And does he have a history of community-based mental health treatment, apart from any emergency settings in which he needed to be admitted?
Yes, he does over the years. He's over these many years, he's been involved with multiple outpatient facilities.
And when did the symptoms of his mental illness first appear?
And I'm reviewing it, somewhere around 16 to 19 was when Mr. Kapnick first became depressed.
And what were the criminal charges that resulted in Mr. Kapnick being committed to the Maryland Department of Health?
I'm referring, Your Honor, to the report that I've submitted to you, just so I get the dates right. There's two incidences that are involved in this present situation. The one related to an incident that allegedly happened in January of 2017. That is a case in Montgomery County Circuit Court. Mr. Kapnick was found NCR July of 2019, and those charges were assault second degree and malicious destruction of property under $1,000. You know, per the application of statement charges, this would revolve around Mr. Kapnick allegedly or reportedly coming over to the house of Mrs. Henry and wanting to get into the house and destroying some property and having an assault on her. The second case would be the second incident. This would happen in reportedly November 17th of 2017. That is a situation in the Montgomery County Circuit Court. Mr. Kapnick was found NCR July 10, 2019. This would refer to two counts of armed robbery. Per the report, application statement of charges, you know, Mr. Kapnick had been at the Shepherd Pratt Mental Hospital in Towson, Maryland. He was not on medications. And then he allegedly went across the street to a house, reportedly took a truck, drove down to Montgomery County, where he attempted to rob a BB&T bank by driving up to the drive-through, and he displayed a note saying, you know, give me some money, claiming that he had a bomb on him, which he did not. That did not work out, so allegedly he went to a TD Bank and went into that bank and reportedly stole about $4,000. Now, that was that case. An offshoot of that is the Baltimore County Circuit Court case, where that is up, and that refers to on the same date of that refers to the November date of 2017, where he allegedly went across the street and took the truck to drive down to Montgomery County for the bank situations.
Thank you very much. And do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to whether Mr. Kapnick suffers from a mental illness or disorder?
He does.
And what is your diagnosis?
I have a couple of diagnoses that are major mental illnesses. The one would be bipolar 1 disorder with a history of mania and psychosis most recently. I believe he also suffers from an unspecified trauma and other stressor-related disorder. What that means is he doesn't, in my opinion, meet full criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder, but due to the unfortunate chronic sexual abuse he had as a child, and then some of the traumas he's experienced while in incarcerated over the years, that he does have some degree of a trauma disorder, and that's unspecified trauma and other stressor-related disorder. His third diagnosis is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Yeah. And what symptoms of those illnesses has Mr. Kapnick displayed when he was symptomatic?
From a review of the records, because while Mr. Kapnick has been under my care for this year, I have never seen him to be in a major depressive episode, a hypomanic, manic. I've never seen him in a mood episode. I've never seen him psychotic. And he has always been linear, logical, and able to advocate for himself. But for the records, you know, when Mr. Kapnick in the past, when he is in a mania, and from what I'm reviewing in the records, that is usually in the context of serious cocaine use, that during those times, Mr. Kapnick can have full symptomatology of mania, which means flight of ideas, pressured speech, impulsive, reckless behaviors, poor sleep, poor judgment behaviors. And in the past, from what the records and from what Mr. Kapnick has told me, that during those episodes, he can become psychotic, become delusional, start thinking his family members, for instance, have been kidnapped and placed in sex rings and that the police might be involved. You know, over the years, when Mr. Kapnick is symptomatic, get manic and get psychotic.
Thank you. And to confirm, is Mr. Kapnick currently symptomatic? And as you stated, he has not been for the entire time that he's been at Spring Grove, which at this point is now over a year.
Right.
Thank you. And to your knowledge, I know you said it would have been before he came to Spring Grove. When was the last time that Mr. Kapnick was symptomatic? If you know.
Well, again, I don't know for a fact. I do know that he was at the Clifton Perkins Hospital for 4 years before he came to us. And while I've reviewed some of the records, in particular the ones right before he came to us, I had not reviewed all 4 years of records. But the records that I've revealed did not, in my opinion, reflect psychosis or mania. By interviewing Mr. Kapnick, I would feel that probably at the time of these crimes, he was symptomatic for sure. That's back in 2017. But in any event, I haven't evaluated him over like this last 6 years, so I don't really know, but I believe it was a long time ago.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And what is Mr. Kapnick's history of compliance with medication?
Mr. Kapnick, I have treated him, and he's always taken his medication. There has never been a problem with him not taking his medication.
And what medication is he taking at this time? Both psychiatric medications and any somatic medications that are of consequence to his health.
Reviewing, reading from my list. Mr. Kapnick is on what is called Vyvanse, V-Y-V-A-N-S-E, and this, Your Honor, the fancy spelling is in my report, so I won't spell them all out for you, but a Vyvanse of 40 milligrams, he takes that in the morning and he takes that at night, 40 milligrams at 6 a.m. and 20 milligrams at noon. Actually, Ms. Bagley, can I just read them off and then you can tell me if you want me to go over the diagnoses. He takes Vyvanse for ADHD. He takes fluoxetine, which is Prozac, for mood support. He takes clonazepam, one dose of that a day at bedtime. That's for anxiety and sleep. He takes quetiapine or Seroquel at bedtime. That is for mood stabilization and support for his bipolar. He takes diphenhydramine, which is Benadryl, at bedtime to help with sleep. He also takes buprenorphine / naloxone, that is Suboxone. That is a medication for his opiate use disorder. That's a controlled substance that he takes twice a day to help him but also when he gets out in the community to help support him from relapsing on opiates. He is on one medication for benign prostate hypertrophy. It's called Tamsulosin, and he gets artificial tears in his eyes twice daily.
Thank you. And currently, are all the medications that he takes administered orally, or are they administered in any other capacity?
They're all oral, except for the eye drops.
Sorry. I would hope so. When Mr. Kapnick is hopefully released into the community, is there any expectation that the method of administration of any of those medications would change? For example, is he going to be transitioned to a long-acting injectable or anything like that?
No, that's not the plans.
Okay. And out of curiosity, is there a particular population who is more likely to be placed on an intramuscular long-term injection as opposed to taking a daily medication?
That would be people who have a documented history of repeated refusals out of the community. And I don't believe that applies to Mr. Kapnick. I believe he'll take his medicines when he gets out in the community. I believe he feels the need for medicines. And that, you know, I don't, he does meet criteria for a long-acting injectable, in my opinion.
Thank you. And is he stabilized on this medication, in your opinion?
Yes, ma'am.
And do you believe that the medications have reached a therapeutic level in Mr. Kapnick's system?
Yes, ma'am.
And Has Mr. Kapnick exhibited any behavior while at Spring Grove that has required the use of seclusion or restraints or a code to be called for security?
There have been none to my knowledge.
And while Mr. Kapnick has been at Spring Grove, have his cognitive abilities been assessed, or has there been a recent occasion when they were assessed?
We have not formally given him neuropsychological testing. I can tell you that in interviewing him the many, many, many hours, I'm assessing his cognitive ability, and you know, I would place him at least above average intelligence.
Thank you. And how would you rate his mood generally?
His mood generally is euthymic, which means right in the middle.
And how is Mr. Kapnick's judgment?
Mr. Kapnick's judgment is sound. I believe that when Mr. Kapnick puts his mind to do something, to follow rules, take his meds, to meet with Dr. Butler, to meet with me, when he puts his mind to it, there's, you know, it's really nothing he can't do. And he exercises solid judgment in that capacity.
And has Mr. Kapnick been involved in any group therapies while he has been at Spring Grove?
In our unit, it's a unit that offers co-occurring, which is a dual diagnosis group. We have anger management. We have coping skills groups. He has attended in his 11 months on this unit a myriad of groups.
And to the best of your knowledge, has Mr. Kapnick been a productive member of these groups, or has he been disruptive?
No, he's not disruptive. He's productive, and he's appropriate in the groups.
How would you say that Mr. Kapnick is doing overall?
I think Mr. Kapnick is doing very well, and I have no hesitations to believe that if and when he is released, that he will do fine in the community. I think he's doing very well. You'll hear from Mr. Winkler, who is going to speak for himself, but I've been on the telephone with Mr. Winkler, and in groups with Michael and him, and you know, Mr. Winkler's believing that Michael's as good as he's ever seen Michael. I respect his opinion, but Michael's been solid since I met him a year ago.
So, Dr. Dressel, what is your opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty whether Mr. Kapnick, as a result of his mental disorder, would be a danger to himself, others, or the property of others if he were to be released from commitment with the Department of Health with or without conditions?
I think with these conditions that he is not going to be a danger to himself or other people.
And how did you arrive at that opinion?
Well, that opinion has just been in knowing him for a year and talking to him and assessing him multiple times during the week and preparing and evaluating him for this moment right now. From the time he got here, we've been focused on, hey, you know, you're coming from Perkins. Let's try to work in the capacity of having you released to the community. And, you know, like I said, evaluating him and working with him, I feel he's ready to go.
Would it be fair to say that the act of Mr. Kapnick being moved from Perkins, a high security facility, to Spring Grove was in a way a step down in care?
No, absolutely. We don't get people from Clifton Perkins who are stepping up. When they come, they've met criteria to be released to what we call a regional hospital. There's four of them: us, Springfield, Finan Center, Eastern Shore. And when patients come from Perkins to one of our regional hospitals, it's because they've shown a degree of stability and appropriateness to come to our place.
Does Mr. Kapnick appear to have genuine insight into his illness?
Absolutely.
And in your communication with him, and I believe you've already stated this, but does he understand the need for medication and the ongoing need for medication for the rest of his life?
Yes.
I believe you've indicated this, but generally speaking, has he been compliant with treatment in the hospital in addition to taking medication? Any other treatment recommendations?
Yes, he's compliant.
When you have had occasion to discuss the underlying criminal incidents that caused Mr. Kapnick to be involved in this system, has he demonstrated or expressed remorse for those incidents?
Yes, he has.
And is Mr. Kapnick aware of what to do if his symptoms resurface? And has he been able to articulate that to you?
Yes, he is aware, and he has explained to me what that is. And it would be to let his program know and to let CFAP know, to let both of them know, and he's aware of that.
And are you aware whether a plan of conditional release has been created for Mr. Kapnick by the treatment team?
Yes, and that plan is what is submitted as one of the exhibits, and that's the letter that I wrote and Mrs. Hearn wrote that we put together for the judge.
So you and Mrs. Hearn put it together, and are you are those recommended conditions of release at this point? Obviously, it's only been a short period of time since you wrote it. Are these still the conditions that you would recommend and that you believe that Mr. Kapnick would be successful on if he were to be released from the community?
They're appropriate at this current time.
And did you have an opportunity to meet with Mr. Kapnick and discuss these proposed conditions of release with him?
Yes.
And was anyone else present for that discussion other than you and Mr. Kapnick?
Just me and him.
And did he indicate or articulate to you that he understood these conditions of release?
Yes, he did.
And did he indicate that he was willing to comply with these conditions of release?
Yes, he did.
And how long is the hospital recommending that this initial period of conditional release be?
5 years.
5 years. And doctor, do you have any serious concerns about Mr. Kapnick being released at this time under these recommended conditions that are in the department's exhibit 2?
I have no concern with him being released under these conditions at this point.
Thank you. Your Honor, nothing further for Dr. Dressel at this time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kapnick, any follow-up questions that you wish to ask Dr. Dressel?
Yes, Your Honor. I just have just a few. Court's indulgence that, you know, I just for a matter of personal wishes, I wanted the doctor to clarify a statement that was made in his report on page 10, and I believe it's paragraph 2. If I could just quickly reference that, it states, I'm sorry, it is page 10, but it's about the middle of the page. It states, after multiple conversations with a public defender, Mr. Kapnick decided that he did not want to further pursue representation from that source, and he elected to represent himself in his administrative law judge conditional release hearing. Dr. Dressel, can you please share with the judge what your understanding of why Mr. Kapnick is representing himself today?
Yes, Mr. Kapnick, I will. So when Mr. Kapnick came here in October of 2022, he had a hearing, a jury trial, a hearing scheduled that was to happen January 4th. And when Mr. Kapnick came here, he's made it clear to me throughout his hospitalization on numerous occasions that, you know, he no longer is an owner of that a lightning rod company. He's mentioned it a number of times that once it went bankrupt, he's not financially vested in it. In any event, you know, when he came here in January, he was going to have that hearing. That was the time when I was out getting my knees replaced. That hearing was postponed until April. Okay. Now, in January, the Office of the Public Defender was representing Mr. Kapnick. I know this to be true. I do know that the Office of Public Defender was going to represent him in January before that April hearing. That April hearing was postponed until October of this year. Now, with that hearing being postponed to October, at that time, Mr. Kapnick had decided to go this route, to go in front of the administrative law judge route, because he knew he had the support of Spring Grove. So the Office of Public Defender, that public defender who had been Mr. Kapnick's counsel since January, told Mr. Kapnick, and I know this to be true, that, you know, in order to go with the ALJ hearing, which we're doing today, that that hearing that's been postponed till October needed to be vacated. So motion was put in to vacate that trial to clear way for this. On June 30th, and I've seen the documents, on June 30th, after that hearing was vacated to clear way for this administrative law judge, the Office of Public Defender withdrew their support or withdrew their counsel for Mr. Kapnick. They sort of left him in the lurch. So it was a little disappointing because we had presented Mr. Kapnick to the Forensic Review Board and we were supporting him way back then to go. So when the Office of Public Defender withdrew their counsel, I know it was difficult for him. So to conclude, and why I wrote in that report what I did and trying to clarify it, Mr. Kapnick had originally had some discourse with the Office of Public Defender to see why did they say that. And you know, they reached a point where Mr. Kapnick decided that since it didn't seem like the Office of Public Defender was going to budge on the matter, and Mr. Kapnick could have pursued that legally for a while, that at some point he told me that he would proceed here pro se, and I was trying to convey that to the court that at some point he's here voluntarily. He will speak for himself, but I do think that if push come to shove, he would have rather have had the public defender be here by his side. That just wasn't happening, and it wasn't his fault.
Thank you. Also, you know, Mr. Kapnick's greatest concern was that because he had such a good therapeutic alliance with you, his chief concern was that, you know, although they're praying for a favorable outcome for today, hence for any reason that there was not a favorable outcome, that he would remain in your care. What information, if any, did you share with him in regards to that?
I may as well tell the court, as I mentioned before, explain a little bit that Mr. Kapnick's been under my care for 10, 11 months out of his time here. And we've spent a lot of time together. And I know his history very thoroughly. And we've got, I believe, a positive therapeutic alliance to a great degree. We have our ups and downs, but that's part of the doctor-patient relationship, and we have a solid relationship. And if for whatever reason today there was a negative ruling and the course was that he's not going forward with this conditional release at this point for the judge's decision, you know, I'd like for Mr. Kapnick to stay on my unit. And I've told him that I would keep him on my unit. Now, do my best. I will keep him on my unit. But as I've said a number of times, you know, I'm not the hospital administrator, Dr. Lam. They have final word. But I do feel that they know how this relationship with Mr. Kapnick. They know where we're at, and I do not see them overriding my judgment to move him somewhere else. She makes the calls, but I believe that if I said I'd like Mr. Kapnick to stay on my unit until we can get a yes here, and that I've told him that.
Okay, thank you. Just moving on. Now, as far as Mr. Kapnick's current presentation, have you ever seen Mr. Kapnick exhibit any violent behavior?
No.
Have you ever seen him incite any violence towards patient or staff?
No.
Has he been aggressive towards patient or staff physically?
No.
I know you had said that he is a willing participant and takes initiative towards his treatment. Can you give any kind of specific examples to show, how really he is focused on his personal recovery and taking responsibility for his mental illness and the care of his illness?
I can speak from a personal note that whenever I miss an appointment for whatever reason, he's very disappointed, and he can advocate for himself, say, hey, what's up with that? I know that Mr. Kapnick looks forward to our meetings, he tells me, and he's always there ready to go. And if they don't happen, he's disappointed. I can also say from a medical point of view, without getting into all the details, Mr. Kapnick has had multiple medical circumstances, rashes, benign prostatic hypertrophy. He's had eyes issues. Since he's been here, there's been a myriad of medical concerns, and he is, the first one to go and talk to the doctors and the providers about his care. He wants to make sure that he's getting the best treatment that he can get, and he takes his treatment mentally and physically serious.
Thank you. Are you aware that he took it upon himself to go out and purchase a dialectical behavioral therapy workbook before you even met him?
Well, if that's going to be exhibit number 7 for the court, but I do know that book Mr. Kapnick is holding up shows his enthusiasm to really dive into the dialectical behavioral therapy aspect treatment that he does with Dr. Butler. And yes, I've seen that book before.
Yeah. Are you aware that Mr. Kapnick also took it upon himself to purchase a wellness recovery action plan, a wrap book, and complete that plan?
It's great.
Apologize. It dropped previously, but it was another book. Are you aware that?
I'm actually finding out about that right now, and I'm not surprised.
Okay. Just a few more things, Judge. You had mentioned regarding the Prozac or fluoxetine. It states in your report that Mr. Kapnick actually came to you and suggested that he be placed on that medication. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What does that type of behavior display?
Good insight into one's mental illness and good judgment and the ability to effectively advocate for oneself.
Finally, you had stated that Mr. Kapnick spent 4 years over at Clifton T. Perkins. Are you aware of Dr. Santoro?
I am aware of Dr. Santoro. She actually works here. She used to work over at Clifton Perkins.
Are you aware that at one point Mr. Kapnick was under her care?
I'm aware of that.
Are you aware what recommendation Dr. Santoro made to the CFRB after Mr. Kapnick had been in her care approximately 6 months?
I'm really not clear on that enough to testify about that.
Okay. It is in the hospital record that Dr. Santoro recommended that Mr. Kapnick be transferred to a regional hospital due to not being placed in restraint, requiring seclusion or intramuscular shot. Unfortunately, COVID hit, thereby freezing the medical system, if you will, and record. But other than that, based on a medical degree of surgency and your expertise, you do feel that Mr. Kapnick is ready for release at this time?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you feel that this environment, per se, being here at the hospital, is antithetical to his treatment, or is...
That's my opinion. I believe I'd like to see Mr. Kapnick be released as soon as possible. He's been here for a year. He's been locked up at the other hospital for 4 years. And, yeah, the circumstances of keeping somebody in, in particular in this case with Mr. Kapnick, in the hospital longer than they need to be. Yes, it sets one up for anxiety and sets one up for interpersonal relationship issues with staff, peers. No, you know, I believe that staying here longer is not in Mr. Kapnick's best interest.
And finally, and this really is a testament to your professionalism, and, you know, working here 13 years, the weight that your opinion carries. Did you share with Mr. Kapnick that you have never had a patient denied that you've recommended in the 13 years that you've worked here?
I have actually made that statement to Mr. Kapnick, and it would be a true statement that in 13 years of presenting anybody to the ALJ, I have not had somebody come back with a negative, but that's my experience. It's the truth.
That's all, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Turn it back to Ms. Bagley if there's any follow-up questions for Dr. Dressel.
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Bagley, are you calling any other witnesses on behalf of the Maryland Department of Health?
No, Your Honor. At this time, we would rest.
All right, very well. How about we take a seven-minute break? We'll return at 11 o'clock, and at that point, I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Kapnick, so that you can present your case. You can testify if you wish.
Right, we'll go back on the record. Present the testimony.
All righty. Okay. We are. One second. We'll just do a quick little announcement. We're back on the record at this point. I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Kapnick, to present your case. I don't know if you wish to testify or if you wish to have Mr. Winkler testify first. It's up to you how you want to present your case.
Yes, I'd like to call Mr. Stephen Winkler as my first witness, please.
Very well. All right, Mr. Winkler, if you could just state and spell both your first and your last name first.
First name is Stephen. Last name is Winkler. I go by Steve.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Winkler, what's your relationship to Mr. Kapnick?
He is my brother-in-law.
Thank you very much. All right, can you raise your right hand so I can swear you in? Do you promise or affirm under penalties of perjury that the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you very much. You can put your hand down, and Mr. Kapnick has some questions for you, and Ms. Bagley might have some questions for you, so I'll turn it over to Mr. Kapnick.
Okay. Good morning, Steve. So how long have you known Mr. Kapnick?
30 years.
And how did you come to know Mr. Kapnick?
I was married to his older sister, Erica, for 13 years. Tragically, she passed away from cancer 12 years ago, a little over 12 years ago.
So you've known Mr. Kapnick and his family for, you said, 30 years in total?
30 years, yes.
Okay. Are you aware of what type of hearing you are attending?
I am.
And can you tell us a little bit about your understanding of a conditional release hearing?
This is to determine, it's a determination by the court as to whether or not Michael should receive a conditional release back into the community.
Okay. do you know the kind of the main the main areas of concern that the court is looking at?
Well, the court's going to go by, well, typically will go by what the doctor's recommendations are. They want to make sure that Mr. Kapnick is not a danger to society and that he's fit to receive a conditional release, as I understand it.
And just to clarify, and I'm just a kind of a bridge abbreviated description, but that he's of others. So have you ever seen Mr. Kapnick symptomatic?
I have.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like?
Typically what would happen would be that Michael would start working 16 hours a day, which would then lead to him being utterly exhausted, which would then lead to him, his judgment becoming worse and worse and worse, which would eventually then lead to him back into substance abuse, and his life would unravel from there.
Now, how do you feel Mr. Kapnick is doing now?
Michael is just doing better than I have ever seen in the 30 years that I've known him.
And can you tell us a little bit about how you can make that determination?
Well, first of all, Michael and I talk every day, literally. And this is by order of the doctor. This is actually recommended by the hospital. We talk every day. And I've been in ministry for 37, 38 years now. And so much of what I'm doing when I talk to Michael is we're discussing spiritual things and how this can help Michael to just lead a better life and to overcome his problems. That's part of it. And then we discuss other things, too. Sometimes we reminisce about his sister, Erica. And, you know, I'm part of the family. So there's that part of it. The other way that I know is that I am part of Michael's treatment. You know, one of the great things about the state of Maryland, I can't speak to any other states, but they have encouraged and welcomed me as a family member to be part of his treatment. And so I've been on many of Michael's ITPs. You know, these are like conference calls with his treatment team, you know, sometimes with other members of the team, but usually more recently with Dr. Dressel and Michael and I.
Okay. When you had said that you speak with him daily and it's kind of supported by the hospital, are you referring to the doctor's order that permits, you know, Michael extended phone time to speak with you for an hour each morning?
Absolutely. I kind of alluded to that, in that there is a doctor's order in place that allows for that because the doctor recognizes that it's helpful to Michael.
And are you aware that Michael specifically has his medication ordered at 6 a.m. versus, let's say, the other patients at between 8 and 9 a.m. Just to start his day early? Are you aware of that?
Yes, and I would just say that the reason I'm aware of that is many times when we're on the phone, Michael says, you know, I need to go take my medication. Very diligent about taking his medication.
So you speak with him at 6 a.m. Is this 3 days a week, 5 days a week, or 7 days a week?
This is 7 days a week.
And how consistently would you say over the past two or three years, has he ever missed days or very infrequently or often? Or
it has been rare that we've missed. Now, you know, stuff comes up, and there's been times where, for whatever reason, you know, I didn't get his call because he's, you know, because I use my cell phone. But well over 90% of that time, we've talked every day.
Yeah, I know it might be a kind of a common belief, you know, family members, they might say anything on behalf of their family members. What could you share with the judge to express, you know, your difference in that area as far as giving Mike tough love or holding him accountable versus just going along with whatever is the best, you know, thing to say at a given time?
There have been times in the 30 years that I've known Michael where I've cut him off, where I've said, you're not serious about your life. You're not serious about your relationship with God. You're a mess. And until you begin to take responsibility for your life, I'm not talking to you. And I've had to do that at times, but I'm so happy and proud to say that over the past 2.5 years, I've not had to do that. Now, you know, in our relationship, there's times where, you know, I might have to correct Michael for something. You know, let's be real, you know, family, this is what happens in family sometimes. And Michael is receptive. This is something, this is a really important issue, because I can tell you that, you know, in times in the past, in years past, he was not. And in the past 2.5 years, I've never seen him more receptive to receiving correction. And even when we have arguments, to his credit, he always says to me, you know what, we had a little bit of argument, but I want you to know that I love you and I respect you and I receive how you were trying to correct me. That's how I would characterize that.
Thank you. The hospital records actually reflect that in the past, you and your wife, Mr. Kapnick's sister Erica, when she was still living, you actually went and filed an emergency petition when you began to see Mr. Kapnick stray from his medication regimen or begin to engage in behavior that you know, could be risky or even dangerous. Is that accurate?
That is 100% accurate, yes.
Has Mr. Kapnick, in the 30 years that you've known him, has he ever exhibited any violence or aggression towards you?
Never. Not one time.
Even when he was symptomatic?
Even when Michael was symptomatic, you know, and I thought, you know, because of his erratic, bizarre behavior, even in that time, he said, you're my brother-in-law, you're a brother to me, and I would never hurt you.
Yeah, it states in Mr. Kapnick's record, I believe his legal history, that he had been charged with kidnapping. Do you know anything about that charge? It's rather serious.
All I know about it is that I don't believe that charge, that he was charged with that, but I don't believe he was convicted with it.
Do you plan on continuing your relationship with Mr. Kapnick when he eventually gets a conditional release?
100%.
Are you close with Mr. Kapnick's son, Michael Jr., or Mr. Kapnick's, we'll call her, significant other or friend, lifelong friend and confidant, Miss Nubia Henry?
Absolutely. And, you know, Michael's son, Michael Jr., he was like a son to me and Michael's sister, Erica, because we never had children of our own. And so there's a real strong bond between me and Michael Jr. And Nubia, you know, has been part of the family for decades. I mean, we're talking, you know, over 20 years, well over 20 years. So, yes, I would characterize that as that we're family. We're close.
Yeah, the hospital record also reflects that Miss Henry herself took out an emergency petition when Mr. Kapnick was acting erratically Are you aware of her, you know, stern disposition and behavior towards Mr. Kavnik?
Absolutely. And, you know, I would say that in like manner, Ms. Nubia Henry doesn't tolerate, you know, verbal abuse, things like that. But I would also want to say that I am very pleased that Ms. Nubia Henry has maintained a good relationship with Michael through all of these trials, through all of this difficulty. She's maintained that. She's not turned her back on him. And I'm appreciative of that. She's supportive of Michael's conditional release as well, because I talked to her, and she is supportive of it.
Real quick, you know, just legally speaking, Ms. Henry is one of the victims in this case. Mr. Kavnik perpetrated a second-degree assault on Ms. Henry, you know, literally grabbing someone or making physical contact would constitute a second-degree assault. Are you aware of the injury sustained during the second-degree assault? Was it egregious? Talking broken bones, black eye, bloody lip, or was it superficial? To your aware, are you aware of, and this was during one of Mr. Kavnik's, I guess, manic episodes?
It was not a serious injury, from what I understand.
Hospital report states that he had thought that he was being filmed on a laptop, and he swatted it out of her hand, and I think inadvertently hit her arm. Are you aware of that situation or no?
Yes. Michael was in the middle of a delusional episode, completely delusional episode, and that was the circumstances around what happened.
Now, on paper, let's talk about the elephant in the room. I mean, Mr. Kavnik doesn't look very good on paper. You know, would you say that off medication, it's like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of scenario with him? I mean, is it that stark a difference?
Yeah, I would characterize it that way. And you know, this is what I stated earlier when I stated that when Michael is not on his medication and then he begins to work 16 hours a day, and he can't sleep at night because of the anxiety, you know, because of the trauma that he suffered as a child, then one thing leads to another, and it's back into addiction. And so it's critically important that Michael stays on his medication. Critically important.
Yeah.
That makes an incredible difference. I'm not a doctor. This is my first-hand observation, knowing Michael for 30 years.
Thank you. Recently, during the doctor's testimony, he stated that Michael has had, you know, a considerable number of jobs. You've known Mr. Kavnik for over 30 years. I mean, do you believe, from what you've seen, is he a career criminal, or is, you know, is he somebody that engages in illicit behavior on a regular basis, or is it kind of when the storm hits, it's bad and for a time, but he's, you know, more often than not doing something healthy and productive, in your own words, sir?
Michael is not a career criminal. I know that, you know, to look at his past, it might look that way, but I would sum it up by saying that it's been a long, hard journey for Michael, and it took a long time for him to understand just how desperately in need he was of psychiatric treatment. I would sum it up that way. And now that he's receiving psychiatric treatment, and, you know, I'm part of the ITPs, you know, I've been part of this process now for 2.5 years. I'm overjoyed. I've never seen him doing so well, and it is because he's not only getting the treatment, he's cooperating with it. Michael is zealous about the treatment. He's totally bought into it. And that is the difference.
Just a few more questions here. As you said, you've attended many of Michael's ITPs. Do you recall attending an ITP with Dr. Santoro?
There's been so many of them. I mean, yes.
No problem. That's okay. Are you aware of the doctor's recommendations while he was at Perkins?
I am aware of the fact that there were doctors there that felt that Michael should, that he didn't belong at Clifton T. Perkins, that he needed to be, that he needed to be in a lower security situation, that he was responding to treatment very well, and that was their recommendation. I'm aware of that.
I mean, was this one doctor, two, or many?
It was at least two or three doctors. And, you know, this has been 2.5 years now, so I'm sorry that I can't remember how many it was. But I want the court to understand. I wanted to hear that. That's what I was looking for. And I was very pleased when I heard the doctors recommending that. Ultimately, they were recommending for a conditional release, really. That's what I recall. They were saying he does not belong at Clifton T. Perkins Hospital.
Bear with me. I think I only have two more questions here. You had mentioned about Mr. Kapnick and some childhood trauma. I mean, just to help the judge understand, I mean, can you expound a little on that? And it is actually difficult to hear and talk about, but I think it is important for the sake of this hearing, what adversity Mr. Kapnick has overcome. And you knowing him for over 30 years and intimately knowing the family, can you, you know, in kind of, with brevity in mind, expound on that issue a little bit, please.
Well, what the family went through was absolutely horrendous. And, of course, I know this firsthand because I was married to Michael's sister, Erica, for 13 years and saw how deeply affected she was by it. And it was essentially that, you know, there's no pleasant way to say it, but Michael's father was a deadbeat dad. He was very wealthy, and he basically essentially just moved on from the family. Michael's mother had a complete, total nervous breakdown in 1983 and never really recovered from it. And then Michael's brother, Tad, abused him repeatedly for years. It was a horrendous situation. I began to understand from that, you know, as time went on, Michael's need for psychiatric treatment. I mean, you know, just, I didn't even understand the full extent of how Tad abused him until years later, because it's a horrendous thing. It's a terrible thing. And of course, Michael didn't want to talk about it. You know, he kind of alluded to it. So what is amazing to me is how Michael has, despite all the odds, how he's battled back from this. He's gotten now himself into a great situation. He's got the proper treatment. He's on the right treatment regimen as far as, like, counseling, as far as, you know, the prescription medications that he's taking. And that's why I say that he's doing better than I've ever seen him. And that's with the understanding of the horrendous childhood that he had.
You, and as you've known, it was important to Mr. Kapnick just tying up loose ends regarding him representing himself. Can you just shed any personal light on that from your perspective?
This is very frustrating for me, as Michael's brother-in-law and advocate, of having to watch what happened. And essentially what happened there was that the Office of the Public Defender withdrew their representation of Michael, and had, and to this day has given, they cannot give a legitimate reason why. Michael does not have finances. I know firsthand that years ago, you know, he when he lost the business and then the business was reformed, it was at that time that Michael could have absolutely positively no part of that due to his addiction issues, as far as, you know, being a part owner. He could have no part of it as far as being part owner. And he's maintained a relationship with Nubia Henry as the mother of his son, but he receives absolutely no financial compensation from Universal Lightning Protection. And so there's no reason, really, that the Office of the Public Defender shouldn't be representing him. It's quite disturbing from my perspective that they're refusing to do so. And I tried to intervene. I actually communicated with two people over at the Office of the Public Defender, and the reasons that they gave, they have no evidence or proof, no legitimate reason why they should not be representing Michael.
And finally, is there anything else that you want to add or say that you may not have had the chance to?
This has been an excellent hearing, and I would just say that I would echo what Dr. Dressel had said earlier, that, and I'm, you know, this is in my own words, but so I'm sort of paraphrasing what he said, which is that at this point in Michael's treatment, he's done so well and he's come so far, it would be counterproductive for him not to get a conditional release. In other words, based on everything that we've heard today, I 100% agree that a conditional release would be the best thing for Michael. It would be the best thing for his treatment at this point in his treatment. I 100% would echo what Michael's doctor has said in regards to that.
Well, thank you for your testimony. I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Let's see, Ms. Bagley, any follow-up questions for Mr. Winkler?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Mr. Winkler, I want to thank you for your testimony. I want to thank you for also signing on and being a part of this hearing. With that, Mr. Kapnick, are you going to be testifying on your own behalf, sir?
Yes, briefly, Your Honor. Just a few things I would like to say. I'm going to be calling myself, Michael Kapnick. You know, the vicissitudes of
Let me swear you in quickly.
Yes, sir.
All right. Do you promise our firm under penalties of perjury that the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do, Judge.
Very well. You got the floor, Mr. Kapnick.
Thank you. I even brought my little clock just to make sure I'll keep this under 5 minutes. I've been known to be a little verbose at times.
Just so you know, Mr. Kapnick, you can take your time. So you could go over 5 minutes if you wish to do so.
I really do appreciate that, Judge. You're very easygoing and kind. I appreciate that. I'm not one to give a sob story. I believe if you do the crime, you should do the time. I have done time in jail in a punitive environment. And anytime I'd feel down on myself, I would look myself in the mirror and say, you did it to your, leap self. And you have no one else to blame but yourself. But as the old adage goes, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And that was my problem. I was doing the same thing over and over. It might have been packaged a little differently, thinking that just because I was clean and sober, that I could work a million hours, or I could be in multiple intimate relationships, or I could, focus on finances or expanding my business, taking account that without that self-care, anything I put before my recovery, so to speak, I would eventually lose, and I did. I am 51 years old. I have spent a good part of my life in one form of an institution or another. But, you know, rather than become bitter, I've genuinely tried to become better. Literally a guy who tried to make lemonade out of lemons. And none of this is prescripted. The vicissitudes of hospital life and the kind of unique nature of how this hearing came to be, I didn't even know if we'd be going forward today. But I don't really like to be a scripted person anyway. I really do like to speak from the heart. And even though I have waited years, and I mean years, for this hearing, because of COVID and the backlog in the court system, because of the transfer in the hospital, and then just the general slow gears of how, you know, things happen. But I have invested in myself. You know, I have a saying that, you know, often men look out into space in a telescope, under a microscope, in binoculars or a magnifying glass, but how often do we turn those looking glasses inside at ourselves? And I've really made a fearless attempt to look at myself, look at those character defects, look at those unsavory areas of my life that I have been, quite frankly, too scared to address. And with the help of Dr. Russell and my brother-in-law and Dr. Butler, who have tirelessly worked with me, and I have had a lot of doctors. I have been shifted around. I am not the easiest patient, but I'm not harmless. I mean, but I'm not harmful, and I can do well on a conditional release. I wish I, you know, had never met you at all, but I wish I could tell you that I'd never had a conditional release before, but I have. But I am proud to tell you that I did complete that conditional release. I have also completed a 5-year stint of supervised probation with the Department of Justice or Maryland Department of Corrections successfully. Actually, they terminated it early because my compliance was so well. I don't want to sound too overly positive, but it's kind of not how I'll do while I'm under supervision. It's really how am I going to do when I'm not on supervision anymore. I think that's like when the real test will take place. But, you know, when you're 18, you think you know everything and you're invincible. And as the decades go by, 28, 38, 48, you start to feel your mortality and you start to realize that tomorrow is not promised. And, you know, for those who are fortunate to live through some of our worst situation, I am very lucky to be given an opportunity at life again. I'm not so old that I can't enjoy playing basketball with my 23-year-old son, who thinks I'm an old man and all washed up. I feel I still have enough energy to go out and then one day install some lightning rods, because my brother-in-law is, in fact, telling the truth. I unfortunately will be handed a tool belt and a pickup truck as a means of making finances when I get out. There is no gold bars in my suit jackets. Don't have a father who's in political office where I could garner influence. And that said, I will have to make it like I've always made it, and that's by the sweat of my own brow. I do feel that I'm in a completely different headspace. I am willing to abide by the conditions of my conditional release. I'm not scared to ask for help. I have learned just a plethora of skills and tools on how to kind of monitor what previously were things that would trip me up, anxieties, insecurities, things about myself that would make me potentially go out and use, go self-medicate, go isolate. I just feel like a completely different person. I committed my crime, Judge, in 2017, and we are in roughly almost 2004, so do the math. Not to mention the, you know, year or so leading up to my getting locked up and eventually adjudicated NCR, I might as well have been locked up. You know, not to sound cliche, but I've learned that freedom is not based on one's location, because there are many people that are in the free world right now, whereas I'm in an institution, but they might die to fentanyl overdose or obesity or heart attack or a life that is not, you know, governed properly. And so with that, I, you know, I have established a certain level of inner peace. Believe me, being in a psychiatric hospital around all of the men with their acute symptoms, and Dr. Dressel knows firsthand, as well as my brother-in-law, how much I am starved of intimate interactions with people. I listen to talk radio all day if I'm not in a group. I set a very vigorous schedule for myself just to hold myself accountable, getting up early, 5 a.m. every day, you know, just so it can almost simulate as if I were out in the real world. So I'm not a guy that's in here sitting on his hands, sleeping in the rack all day, medicated, and just kind of passing time. I hope Your Honor, you know, takes into consideration, I'm not just some playboy guy out there globetrotting from a wealthy family. And I'm not going to also sit here and cry on the shoulder about all of my misfortunes in life. You know, you've heard the old, one guy cries because he doesn't have shoes, another guy cries because he doesn't have feet. So, you know, somebody always does have it worse. And with that, I'm thankful for what I do have. But in my limited amount of knowledge about, you know, the whole field of psychiatry, I do feel I've reached a point where I've kind of grown to the size of my tank, and I'm ready for, you know, bigger waters. Of course, with the accountability of, you know, CFAP monitoring my release, the very strict 21 or 22 points of my conditional release plan, and then loving and very strict family members holding me accountable. I'm at 7 minutes, and I've gone over by two, but I have waited roughly, you know, 6 years for this day, and I hope Your Honor can find it within his heart and believes in the evidence that was presented to you today, that I, at a bare minimum, am worthy of, you know, a conditional release to a, you know, to a group home in a strict 24/7 supervised environment. With that, regardless of your decision, Your Honor, I thank you for your time, and I appreciate all that the Maryland Department of Health has done for me. In specific, Dr. Dressel, Dr. Butler, the remainder of my treatment team that's not here, and my family members that I aren't here, but especially Uncle Steve, who has never turned his back on me. And with that, I'll close, Your Honor, and I pray for a favorable outcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Bagley, any questions for Mr. Kapnick?
Just one, Your Honor. So, Mr. Kapnick, what are you most looking forward to doing once you are released from the hospital?
Gaining my children's forgiveness for being absent for so much of their lives. I know it's not going to be an overnight process, but it's not steak dinners and convertible cars in the beach. It's making amends to him. That's what I'm looking forward to most.
Thank you, Mr. Kapnick. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kapnick, anything that you wish me to know based on that question? Anything further? All righty.
Judge, I think we left it all on the table today.
All righty. Very well. Then at this point, we're going to go with closings where you tell me what you want me to do with this case. Mr. Kapnick, you have the floor, and you can tell me what you want me to do with this case.
Okay. I apologize. A little emotional there. In the book, representing yourself in a civil trial and preparing it, a win, they say, during closing arguments is where you're supposed to go for it. So I do believe Mr. Kapnick has met the burden of displaying that he is not currently a danger to himself, others, or the property of others. I don't know if we just lost Ms. Bagley and Mr. Winkler, but their screens went blank on our end. There they are.
They're still here.
Well,
yeah.
There's Ms. Bagley, and I don't see Mr. Winkler.
He's here. Okay. He just waved and said he's
Ms.
here.
Ms. Bagley's kind of... Okay, great. We heard from Mr. Kapnick's doctor, a doctor who had gone to Harvard at one point. He has worked here for over 13 years. He has a wealth of experience in this field, and he himself has made a recommendation that, Mr. Kapnick be given a conditional release. Given that he follows the conditions of that conditional release. We've heard some really positive things today about Mr. Kapnick. His zealous initiative towards treatment, his willingness to change, his obvious acknowledgement of his mental illness, and even his intuitive steps to see that he may even need an additional medication, i.e. the Prozac, at a time of need. So I believe that Mr. Kapnick has displayed considerable insight and good judgment. I think it is important to note that Mr. Kapnick, as per the words of Dr. Dressel, and his testing does show that he is at least average or above average in intelligence. And in that, stating that he does have the mental fortitude and aptitude to follow the conditions of his conditional release. I don't believe there'll be an issue of Mr. Kapnick's, any type of, disability cognitive disability that would withhold him from fulfilling the conditions of his conditional release. As Mr. Kapnick had stated, he has completed a conditional release in the past. And despite, really exhibiting some very poor, dangerous behavior in the community, Your Honor, he does genuinely have tremendous remorse about that. It's also noted in his hospital record. Just a couple other things that were not mentioned that are also noted in Mr. Kapnick's hospital record, that Mr. Kapnick did have a risk assessment conducted in 2019, though he kind of showed in the moderate to high range of paroxysm. It did say that Mr. Kapnick did not meet the diagnostic criteria for asocial personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder, despite showing some cluster behaviors in a time of an episode. He did not meet the criteria for a full-blown diagnosis of the narcissistic or asocial personality disorder. I think that's really important, when coming to determine if somebody is, if they are apathetic, empathetic, they're altruistic. As Dr. Dressel has noted in this very report, that Mr. Kapnick does a lot of altruistic behaviors, not just giving things to patients, but helping them with grooming, cleaning up, making their beds, not babying them, but just offering help where he sees, that it's an opportunity to lend a hand. I know Mr. Kapnick is not here to take care of other patients, but it is good to know that he is willing to chip in when he sees the need. I think most importantly, in this controlled environment, seeing that Mr. Kapnick, despite being punched in the face on two or three different occasions by multiple different psychotic patients, all within the hospital record, Mr. Kapnick did not strike back. He did not fight back, with the exception of one patient who just continually punched and continued to punch. So Mr. Kapnick, if we use the old fight, flight, or freeze, it pretty much would be the flight. And I think Mr. Kapnick has exhibited that now he's ready to, instead of run from his problems, to actually face them, which has been a key issue in his past. Other than that, Mr. Kapnick has been observed in a controlled environment and exhibited a rather lengthy period of clinical stability. Watchful eye of a seasoned psychiatrist. He has not exhibited any manic or hypomanic behaviors, any physically aggressive behaviors or physically aggressive behaviors. With that, we hope Your Honor finds favorably on behalf of Mr. Kapnick today, as he has not only received the blessings of his doctor, the FRB, the CFRB, but he's also been accepted to, a community program. He still has to go through the application process, but he has been deemed fit for placement. Now he just has to go through the process of actually getting accepted. With that, Your Honor, we just thank you for the opportunity to be heard today and to present Mr. Kapnick's situation to you, and hope that all facets of Mr. Kapnick's childhood, past, and current state of stability are taken into consideration when deciding on a conditional release or not. And with that, I'll close, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kapnick. I'll turn it over to Ms. Bagley for the MDH's position.
Thank you, Your Honor. I truly don't think I could have said it better myself than what Mr. Kapnick said. So I would just note that the hospital and the department is in support of Mr. Kapnick's release, and we would ask that you grant his release under the conditions that have been recommended by the department. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, everyone. I think this has been a fantastic hearing on both sides. I think both sides did a fantastic job advocating for what they were advocating for. So I want to thank everyone for appearing. I want to thank for the witnesses who testified, everyone who came out. What I state at the beginning of the hearing is still how it goes. I don't give a decision today. It's a written recommendation that goes to the circuit court judges. Both sides will get a copy of that recommendation. The recommendation and the decision on whether or not Mr. Kapnick is ultimately released is actually in the hands of those circuit court judges, but I will be issuing my recommendation to them. My recommendation is due out 10 days from today's hearing, which 10 days from today is November 10th, 2023. So I'll be sure to file that recommendation with the circuit court judges by that date. Both sides will also get a copy of my recommendation. If either side feels that exceptions are warranted, then they do have the right to file exceptions. And that exceptions process will be listed on one of the last pages of that recommendation that is sent. Last but not least, just housekeeping from Ms. Bagley. Ms. Bagley, I'm going to put in the chat my email address. Please take note of it so that you can send two different things, if you don't mind. First, the papers that Mr. Kapnick wants to have admitted as patient's exhibit number one. And the other thing that, if you don't mind sending, if you have the ability to access those 21 or 22 different terms of conditional release, if you can send them over in a format that if I find it appropriate to place in my recommendation. So,
yes, Your Honor. I'll send them to you in a Word document.
Perfect. All right. I'm going to put my email address in the chat. Take note of it because as soon as the hearing concludes, you won't have the ability to see that email address.
Got it, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. You got it down?
Yes.
Perfect. All right. With that, that concludes this matter. Mr. Kapnick, wish you the best of luck with everything, sir. And if there's nothing further, that concludes this matter. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Bagley.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
Take care.
Pleasure. Thank you.